Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka The Proof Fairy, and this podcast is an excuse for me to have a chat with a published author about what inspires them to write, how they go about the writing and publishing process, and what effect it's had on their life. And I also ask them what tips they have for other aspiring authors. My guest today is a writer, musician, and podcaster who wrote his first book at the age of 8. Andrew Kultcher is the author of Getting It, a romantic novel, and several short stories, and he's also currently working on another novel and pre-publishing it in a very interesting way. This is a bit more of an amiable chat between friends than most of the episodes of this podcast, but it was a lot of fun to do, and I really hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Hello, Andrew. Thank you so much for being on my podcast today.
You're welcome. It's nice to see you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you. Thanks for asking. So tell me about your books.
Okay. So the first book I wrote in, I think it was 1983.
Wow. 1983.
Well, I didn't finish that one. It was about aliens visiting Cheddar Gorge in Somerset. And okay. I lost my way a bit with it. A little bit. So I got out, unusually for, I think I was about 7 or 8, I got a copy of Pilgrim's Progress out of the village library,
right,
and just started copying sections from that into my my Somerset-based alien story.
No plagiarism at all there, then.
No, I don't think I understood what plagiarism was. So that, I abandoned that one, but I did complete another book about a year later.
Wow, I was really at the age of what, 8, 9, something like that?
I think I was 9. Yeah, possibly almost 10.
Okay.
And I wrote the A to Z of Cats.
And
it was all illustrated by me in a very cat-handed way.
Yeah.
I'm not an illustrator. I wasn't then. I'm not now. And I was very proud of this. So I sent it off to Hamlin because I looked on the back of one of the one of my favourite kind of big picture books. And I thought, well, they're to send it to. And amazingly, my parents helped me kind of figure out how to post stuff.
Yeah.
That would be more of a challenge than I thought. So I posted it off to Hamlin. That must have been 1984.
Yeah.
And I'm still optimistic about hearing back from them. I've not heard anything since then.
Was that the only copy of the A to Z of Cats that you had, that you posted them?
Well, I think being an author is sometimes about learning really difficult lessons. And yeah. That lesson was don't send off your only copy to a publisher.
No. Oh gosh, I would love that. It would have been so lovely if you got a letter back from them. That's such a shame that they didn't.
I'm still hoping they do.
So that didn't put you off writing though?
No, not at all. It's always been something I've really, really enjoyed.
Yeah.
I like several other writers I know. I actually failed my GCSE English. And I found out afterwards, fairly recently, it may have partly been because, it's such a humble brag, because the teachers thought I was plagiarising people. Now, I wasn't, this time it wasn't.
No Chaucer in your schoolwork.
It wasn't that at all, but yeah, apparently I only found out recently that my teacher was in contact with my parents and accusing me of basically nicking other people's stories, which I absolutely wasn't. Flat up was not doing that, but I enjoyed some books at that age which may have not been that normal for teenage boys or girls to read. I was really into like Catch 22. I absolutely absolutely blew my mind at a young age, so I dare say the stories of writing were probably a bit bleak and a bit dark for a jolly teenager.
They just couldn't believe that you would be capable of writing something like that, I guess, at that age.
I'm not implying they...
So you must have been copying.
Well, they didn't say it was any good. So it wasn't like they were saying he was copying good authors. just nicking stuff.
Oh, no. Gosh.
So I've always been starting books. And I think that's probably a fairly common thing, I imagine. With your kind of professional life, that's something you must come across relatively
start
often.
Never finish.
Yeah. And I started another one. Actually, I got a computer when I was on the dole.
Yeah.
Must have been mid-90s and I started writing another book.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I'd write it between the hours of midnight and 4 a.m. and not write it any other time. Right. So it didn't last that long. I've still got it somewhere. I found the file, and obviously that's very old. I shudder to think. Well, the problem was I decided I wanted to write a book, and I didn't have a storyline or a plot, which...
A bit of a drawback, I guess.
A bit more challenging, but over the years I became a professional writer without writing fiction. Mm-hmm. So writing non-fiction for clients, so articles, columns in magazines.
Yeah,
I used to publish my own little music magazine, which we called Mazine, and I did mm-hmm. that for a long, long time. And I was starting to feel quite good about my skills. I was starting to think, this is good, you know, people are basically giving me money to write now.
Yeah.
And so I decided, myself and a friend decided to travel to America to write a book, to write a travel book. Because okay. at the time I was getting really into Mark Twain's early travel books, which I still adore. So mm-hmm. absolutely books like Roughing It and Innocence Abroad and other ones. So the friend I traveled with had a bit of a literary background. His dad was one of the founding editors of the Independent newspaper.
Oh,
and
okay.
His mum was also a writer, or is a writer, I should say. Mm-hmm. So we decided to go to America and write a book. Mm-hmm. And at the time, my friend Sam was writing for Terrorizer magazine, which is a metal magazine,
right.
which led to some interesting kind of questions as we were going through US immigration. Mm-hmm. You know, been to the States,
I write for Terrorizer magazine. Yeah, okay. Right. Let's just come over to this little room over here for a minute, please, sir. Yeah, I can imagine.
we started off in near Boston, because I'm a musician as well, and I brought a bando from Boston, toured the UK, and we took them to some glamorous places on tour, as like Wolverhampton, Harlow, all the high points. Anyone listening from those places, I'm genuinely not being mean. Harlow had a venue called The Square that was amazing. But anyway, so we were due a return trip. So instead of taking my band over, because they're all feckless idiots, as most musicians are, I decided to go over and write a book. So we started in a place called New Bedford, which is where the guy who wrote Moby Dick was from. I can't remember his name. And we travelled...
Melville?
That's the chap,
Herbert Melville?
So we co-wrote a book, and we started at the Plymouth Pebble, or Plymouth Rock, rather. So Pebble, because it's actually small, and we traveled down America. And the idea was we'd start at Plymouth Rock, where the pilgrims were, and we traveled down, and we were going to Washington and to attend President Obama's first inauguration.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The idea was we'd have this book kind of charting our journey through, loosely based on going from the pilgrims' first landing to the first black American president.
Right. Yeah.
While we were staying near Washington, we're actually staying in Virginia, which is very, very close by. Mm-hmm. The family we were staying with, the dad of the family, who were friends with my writing partner's parents, he'd just come out as being head of CIA for Europe. And he'd a couple of years previously quit his job as one of the chief advisors to George Bush. As far as I was concerned, there was a lot of material. There was tons. Fascinating things, and I got back, and needless to say, the actual event, the inauguration, was utterly overwhelming. The book was supposed to be written as like a fairly light-hearted da 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 kind of la la, we're going through the country, oh look, now we're here. But when we were actually there at the inauguration, my friend Sam and I were just utterly overwhelmed.
Wow.
Just
beyond
it. We were so emotional afterwards. We went to the cinema. We went to go and see Benjamin Button with Brad Pitt in it. Just floods of tears, literally just destroyed by this film. So I came home and I said to my wife, I said, you've got to see this film. I have never like been so emotional watching a film. And we watched it together, and about 10 minutes, I was like, I'm sorry, this is crap, isn't it?
I was going to say, it's a dreadful film. I can remember seeing it, and it's an awful film. Absolutely. But yeah, it just shows, your mood when you see something completely transform the experience. And presumably it was all that emotion carried over from the inauguration, which was a historic moment, wasn't it? The first black US president.
We had no context, and I still don't believe we have any context in I'm English, and I don't think I have any context to how important it was. Yeah, you know, we can say it's important, but as soon as we kind of came out the subway station at the brilliantly named Foggy Bottom in Washington, there were black families like hugging us. And when they found out we'd come from Britain, they were just overwhelmed that they were like, well, you've come all this way for this. And we were kind of like, yeah, well, we didn't say anything. Basically, as you can tell, I like to talk. I think I barely said a word all day because it was too much. So wild. And these people, you know, 5.5 million people or whatever, a lot of them had emptied their bank accounts and come from the deep south. It was a huge thing. So I got back to the UK and I was like, this is it. My first proper meaty nonfiction book. I'm going to write it. And I powered out 90,000 words.
Gosh.
And my co-writer wrote 15,000.
Okay.
when we were reviewing, I read his work, and he's a beautiful writer. He's just one of those people. He's such clarity in his writing. He's since gone on to do a PhD, and he's a very clever and very erudite man.
Yeah.
And his writing was just beautiful to read. And I said to him, what do you think about my writing? And he said, I'm really pleased you've learned how to use paragraphs. And I can remember, oh my God. And I looked at this 90,000 words I just crapped out. And it was awful. It was terrible. And then I made the mistake that some other writers I've spoken to have made this same mistake. I thought, well, I've done the work, so I'm still going to try and put it out there.
Right, yeah.
So this is back in the days when you used to buy a copy of the Writer's Handbook, that big, massive, meaty
big
tome.
Big red book, yeah.
That one, yeah. And I sent out, I don't know, 100, three chapter samples. Yeah. And
did you send it to Hamlin?
I didn't. I was a bit burnt by them. That mistake.
Maybe they were the ones. Maybe that was your moment with Hamlin.
Hamlin wouldn't want badly scribbled drawings of President Obama, as I saw in 2 miles. And coincidentally, at the time, my wife and I hadn't had a television for a long time. It's not unusual these days for people not to have a television, but back then, obviously, because this is 2008-ish, it was fairly
weird.
And I finished this book, sent off all the manuscripts. And I went around to visit my sister because she just lives a few doors away. And she is one of these people who always has the television on. Mm-hmm. And she was watching this program with Stephen Fry in a black cab going around America. And I was like, this looks really interesting. And of course, at the end of the episode, there was the obligatory buy the BBC book. And I just thought, you know what? Out of my book and his book, I'd rather read his book than my book. So I thought, that's it. I'm done. Yeah. That's about enough for me now. But it didn't last. So about a year later, I thought, well, enough mucking about. If I'm going to do it, I need to do it properly. And I need to train myself the same way I'd train myself to become a grammar pedant and spell and all those things. I decided to actually work on it. Then I really did a lot of thinking. I thought, well, what sort of books do I like reading that I think might be accessible?
Yeah.
And I love, there's a whole slew of romance novels that came out, I don't know, probably starting about the 80s by like Katie Ford, Judy Astley.
Oh, yes. Yes, I used to love all those. Katie Ford, I was a big Katie Ford fan. Katie Ford with two Fs. Yeah,
and
loved her books.
Absolutely freakishly, and I'm still not sure how this happened. I made friends with Judy Astley and Katie Ford on Twitter and just got chatting to them.
Okay.
Katie Ford started following me because I posted a picture on Twitter of me wearing a white unitard that I'd stuffed things liberally. I don't know what's going to. It was a part of the act for the band we were at the time. And she posted a picture of it and said, this is Andrew Culture. I think I need to follow him.
Oh, my word. Gosh.
What a bizarre first impression.
So
I decided to write romance. And I was just looking up the name of a book that I found at the time. And it was written, I think, by someone called Leslie Cookman. I could be wrong. And it was basically how to write a romance novel. And I learned to plot. That was what made the huge difference. I learned that I need to know what happens in this chapter, and I learned about story arcs. And I mean, romance novels are formulaic. but it's because of the formula that works. And I think everyone who reads that kind of book knows the formula, and it's safe. It's like a warm place. It's okay.
Yeah, it is my guilty pleasure. There's a whole slew of books nowadays, you know, the little bookshop on the end of the road and the little cafe on the seafront and the little, and it's all, 20, 30 something woman goes to a place, opens up a new business, meets a man, there's some sort of problem, they don't get together, and then they do get together, and everyone lives happy ever after. And that is my guilty pleasure. I have read so many of those.
It's the same here. I absolutely love them. I've just got a funny little aside. I'm going to mention someone I know she's written a book called Isabella Smooge.
Okay. And,
appallingly, my brain has completely, she's called Ruth. My brain's completely failing me. Ruth B. Now she lives in the same village as my parents, and she wrote this book called The Diary of Isabella M. Smooge. And as to type, as you would expect, it's somebody who moves from the city to a small village and so on and so forth. You know, it's a great thing. We all love it.
I'd love it, I'm sure.
But she included lots of characters in the book based on people in the village. And it's amazing. So many people I know have read this book, and we think my mum's in it. I say we, me and my sister both think my mum's in it. And my mum thinks she's in it, and she may well be, but we haven't yet, you know, had the conversation with her about
it. Anyway,
so that was it. So I wrote a book, and the book was called Getting It.
Yeah.
And I decided to write a male main character, because other than, there's not many. There's Mike Gale and a few other
authors. Mike Gale is about the only... Yeah. Yeah, the only male romance writer I've ever. Peter Jones as well is another who's a friend of mine.
Look him up.
A few. Yeah.
But so that was my thing, and I'm still proud of it. It came out like 11 years ago. I can toust it around the agents again because that's what we do, and I sent it to some friends who already published authors. Nothing came of it, and a bandmate of mine who's he's written quite a lot as well. And he's also taught creative writing. And he's someone whose opinion I respect. He read my book, Getting It. And he said, I think it's really brave of you to have written a practice novel. I'm telling you these things. I thought, how many times have I been like actively discouraged by the universe?
And yet you still carry on. There's a determination here that is never going to die, I get the feeling.
It will. And the same thing's true of my music. You know, I've been playing in bands for over 30 years now.
Yeah.
Untroubled by the issues associated with success, I think you could politely say. But yeah, I think I'll carry on. And I'm very close to finishing another novel at the moment. And I've been close since the day before my daughter was born 10 years ago.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, because...
So will this one be finished at some stage?
I've put myself under pressure to do it, and I'll explain how. The first book, I had this lovely process where I do my worky work stuff. I work for myself, and about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd stop. And I bought a little thing called a netbook. They don't really exist now, but they were basically like super cheap laptops.
Yeah.
And I'd go and sit in the room, in my one hot room in my hovel in Suffolk. No, I'd go sit in the lounge. And that was it. I could shut the door. My wife would be out at work. Yeah. And I'd get two or three, four, maybe even more hours to just sit there and just write.
Yeah.
And not rush, not like crap it out like I did that travel book.
Yeah.
But... really, so I finished the first book and I was all ready to go on to the next one. I knew exactly what to do, and the reviews for the first book were very telling, and I agreed with almost all of them. A lot of the reviews, I made the mistake of having the lead male character as someone who was dislikable, which is doesn't really work in retrospect. And a lot of the American reviews, they're all still up on Amazon. I like bad reviews. more like good reviews, but some of the, a lot of the American reviews were saying, look, I just don't get the humor. He said, you know, it's, I don't understand at all. Yeah. So I decided that with the second book, it needs to be accessible. Stop trying to be clever. Stop trying to put in hidden meanings. I wanted to write something that it would just, you could just digest it. You know, mm-hmm. It would just like having a nice meal that doesn't give you indigestion.
Right. Or whatever. Yeah.
Sat down, started writing it. I think it's a very funny book. I'm very, very pleased with it. But yeah, when my daughter was born, the ability to sit there for several hours, it's not come back yet.
Yeah.
But I'm determined to finish it. I know where I am in the book. I'm only like two chapters from the end. So
to put myself,
I know. And I know where to go, but
yeah.
To put myself under pressure, I started serializing it as a podcast.
Okay.
So the idea being is that I'm going to run out of chapters.
You're going to have to have an end, aren't you? You can't just abandon the podcast on chapter 30 and have no and conclusion.
I know the end. Yeah, it's all plotted out. I know exactly where it's going. So I started reading it and it sounds really big-headed, but I'm really enjoying it. I think it's very funny. It's not big. I think you have to like it.
Yeah.
I think if you worked hard, it's okay to say this is good.
Yeah.
I'm proud of it.
I'm really intrigued. So you started this more than 10 years ago, mm-hmm. presumably. And now you're going to finish it. Does it still work? Because the world has moved on quite a lot in sort of 10, 12, 15 years, hasn't it? So does it still work? Or are there elements that you wrote about back when you started writing it that you've had to change or that?
I very deliberately wrote it being aware of cultural memes and being aware of technological things. You know, it's not like loads about MySpace in it or something, you know, it's
Bebo. Yeah.
Little Friends Reunited. And I deliberately didn't mention, there's no products mentioned in it.
Right.
There's things in it which I don't think are going to change, like that they have mobile phones.
Okay.
Because the invention of the mobile phone, if you look at almost any novel or any film from pre 1980, there's always a point in the film where you go, well, if they had mobile phones, this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
We're probably fairly safe that they're going to be around for a while. But
the humor,
I'm surprised how little my sense of humor has changed, because mm-hmm. there's a danger with writing that you always hate everything you did a few months ago. And you can become, I know I can become obsessed with it. Well, the way I write now is much better. It used to be awful. And it's been sort of encouraging and a bit depressing to realize I haven't progressed that much in the 10 years since I last wrote anything for people at all. But hopefully,
but in many ways, that's a bonus, though, isn't it? I mean, I edited a book for someone that they'd started writing it 5 years ago, and then they stopped about halfway through, and then they finished it. And there was such a mismatch in their writing style because I'm not sure if they'd improved or they'd gone backwards, really, but there was a real mismatch. So there was a point when you could say, right, I can tell you exactly when you stopped writing this book and when you picked it up again. So it sounds quite good, actually, that for whatever reason your writing is, I'm not going to say your writing hasn't progressed. Your writing is the same. You obviously have your style. And
yeah, it does concern me. It's a big concern. I mean, this is going to be the first draft. You know, it's not going to be, it's not as big as the last book. It's probably going to top out about 60,000 words.
Yeah.
So I've tried to make it kind of length a novel that you'd read on a 5-day holiday, or you could probably get it done. You know, just
about right. Yeah.
Not challenging. There's everything's just told you. There are motifs in it, of course, and there are things that not everyone might get, but on the whole, it's a Woodhouse described books like that as a quick snack rather than the whole feast. Oh, I think he actually said rather than the whole orgy is what he said, but his which has changed compared to what we have then.
we all need a quick snack, though, don't we? Snacks are often preferable to the meal, actually. Yeah. So I'm interested. The first book, getting it. You said you hawked that round publishers again.
Yeah.
How did you get a contract, or how did you publish it? Because this is some time ago, isn't it? This is going back.
It's some time ago. I got a few nibbles of interest, but nothing nothing concrete. I was going for an agent, not going direct to a publisher.
Right.
I needed someone who would understand the work I was prepared to put into it. Because having come from the music industry, I'm very much aware that no publisher or record label, if you're a musician, is going to go, hey, this body of work has great merit, so we're going to work with it. That's not what they want. They want someone who's going to put the time in. I mean, this, you know, friend Ruth Lee, who's written Isabella Smooth, she is always on the road. Mm-hmm. And if you follow kind of authors, they slog it out. They really do. I'm very aware that an agent needed to see me as someone who wasn't just doing this for a laugh, wasn't doing it as a sideline or whatever.
Yeah. You're a serious author and you're serious about it.
Yeah, serious author. But this is the interesting thing, because I don't know if I am with the second book. I kind of feel I need to get it out of me. But the reality, I mean, I can do the whole touring thing. The main reason I work for myself is that as a musician 20 years ago, I was starting to tour.
Yeah.
And feckless bandmates were unemployed, so it was no problem for them, and I had a job. You can't say, sorry boss, I need to play in Skegness on Tuesday. So Wednesday, it doesn't work.
I can do it.
I'm very, very flexible after 20 odd years of working for myself, but I don't know. I've just asked myself a question there that I don't have an answer to, because I absolutely do want to carry on writing.
Okay.
So what's the motivation? Do you write? I write because I have to.
I write because I am.
Incredibly pretentious thing to say, but
yeah.
Those people, those around me, get fed up of listening to me, I'm sure. So if I write, then it sort of gives me.
you can get it out without annoying everybody else, I guess. So how did you publish that book then? You said you got some nibbles, but I'm guessing you must have self-published it in the end. But this is, what year is this and how did you do it?
I published it on Kindle.
Okay, yeah.
That was fairly...
kind of the early days. That was right back in the early days of Kindle, wasn't it?
It was in the early days, but I'd been tinkering with Kindle publishing for a while. I wrote a book called A Multi-Story Tale of NCP Car Park Hell.
Okay.
Which, it's only a short story, really, but oh, I don't know how long it is. It's about I accidentally got locked in a NCP car park in Catford, and I wrote a story about it, partly to see if when you search for NCP Catford, whether my story would come up instead of the actual car park.
So it's an SEO experiment, really, rather than a
thing. And it did. It worked really well.
Wow.
And then
a
little collection of short stories, and then another book, sort of memoir of being an idiot in a village, as opposed to being a village idiot, I guess. So it was the early days of Kindle, and
I initially it was
a joy, because I think the UK authors at the time appeared to be quite far behind America, so there was plenty of advice out there for how to do it. And I mean, the tech side, I still don't think it's that straightforward, but I managed to do it, and I managed to get people to read it, and there's lots of really good promotion tools on the Kindle platform. And so you can give your book away for free, which sounds like an odd thing to do, but give it away for free for a week, and that means hopefully loads of people get it, and then they write reviews, and the more reviews you get, more Amazon will promote it. One of the coolest things that happened was a friend of mine with a Kindle. This is not that many people had Kindles back then.
Yeah.
A friend of mine with Kindles excitedly sent me a message saying, "Oh my God, I've just been recommended your book by Amazon because they send out."
Excellent.
I mean, I now know that that's just the algorithm, because they probably looked at my book. But at the time, I was like, "Wow, what else is on there?" And he was like, "Well, there's all these kind of massive name authors, and then there's you." And I'm like, "God, I've cracked it." Clearly hadn't.
But partway there. So I'm really intrigued about the idea that you write romance and you're a man, because I think that is kind of quite unusual, unless all these people writing romance books are men, but they just use women's names. I don't know. Is this current book romance as well?
There's an element of romance in it, but if anyone listening hasn't read a lot of romance, it's really not Mills and Boone these days. It hasn't been for a long, long time. The books like the ones Judy Assey writes are just very funny snapshots of usually kind of like suburban life or people going through challenging times. And it's another Woodhouse-ism, is it's not the story, it's the way it's the story's not the thing, it's the telling.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an element of romance, but it's not sickly kind of gazing into each other's eyes. It's more people being thrown together and assuming they're going to dislike each other. I don't want to give it away. I can't tell you exactly.
No, don't do that. I'll have to wait for the great day when it comes out to find what happens, find out what happens. Do you think it'll be this year?
I do. I'm planning to probably do something really simple, like book a couple of nights in a travel lodge in a nearby city and just go there. Because I've been podcasting it, the nice thing is I'm quite up to date with it now.
Right,
taking a train, sitting and listening to the podcast, reading it, and then getting into a travel lodge room and not leaving. I think I only need a couple of days.
Yeah.
I can write. I used to be able to write as fast as I could think, which wasn't a good thing.
Hence 90,000 words of, paragraphs. Yeah.
Yeah, no, so, I will.
That's really good. And I do love the idea of kind of motivating yourself to get it finished by doing the podcast. Because, if you've got people listening, it puts that pressure on you, doesn't it? That you can't just abandon it now. You have to finish it. I think that's a really great strategy.
Well, and people are listening to it. People I already know. I mean, it's the weird thing with podcasts. It's never that clear to find out how many people are listening to them across all platforms or how much of each episode they've listened to. Mm-hmm. But, people I know have said, hurry up and record the next chapter. So
cool.
People are listening.
Yeah.
Enjoy. The problem is I keep giggling when I'm trying to read it.
It sounds like you're enjoying what you're reading, which is a good sign. Absolutely. You said, you need to like it yourself. In terms of having something to put the pressure on, my first book, I abandoned it, or I only abandoned it for three months, not 10 years, but I kind of wrote half of it and then abandoned it, and then thought, nobody's going to beat this stuff anyway, I'm not going to bother. And then a friend of mine said, well, somebody will read it. I can't think of her exact words, but she encouraged me to finish it. So I one Saturday morning I thought, right, I'm going to finish my book, I'm going to have it in my house on this date, and I'm going to have a Facebook launch party. And I kind of worked backwards to make sure that it was physically possible to do, and it was. Just so I did. So that day I set up the Facebook launch party and I invited everyone to it, and it was like, well, I've got to do it now, haven't I? So I think sometimes setting yourself a deadline that other people are involved with can really help motivate you.
Real believer that, and there's parallels between being a musician and being a writer. I started making a new type of music, well, new to me, electronic music, a few years ago, and I decided I was going to release 7 albums in 1 year. And I told people this, and I did it.
Yeah,
because. I don't know what it is. I know for a lot of people, writing is a very personal thing, and the whole process is it's you and a screen and your brain. There's nothing else. But it's not that by committing to that, I'm not seeking validation, I don't think. I think it's literally just, I don't care about looking foolish. I didn't care if people think, well, he didn't do it, I'm never talking to him again. It's just nice little bit of pressure, because otherwise nothing happened. The worst thing I think would be people always say that, you should never die with a novel in you. And I think that sounds like the quickest way to get a blocked colon and reading a novel in the first place. But that feeling of, I wish I'd written that. There's nothing stopping you.
Yeah.
Nothing. There is no reason whatsoever. And that feeling of not having created something when you always wanted to, that must just be the worst. What's the point?
Oh gosh, and the feeling when I've always wanted to write a novel, and this year I did, or last year, 2022, aren't we? Last year I did it. I took part in NaNoWriMo and I wrote this novel. And my mum has read it. She's the only person who's read it, and she says it's very well written. and it's very nice, it's very cozy, but nothing really happens. But, you know, that's fine. But the fact is that I did it, you know, I wrote it, and just that feeling of satisfaction when you finally do it and you get to the very last page and write the end on it, and it's all your own work, especially a novel, which is completely your own work, isn't it? It's kind of not so much research based. It's just the stuff in your head. There's no feeling like it, really.
I had a little cry when I finished my first novel.
Oh.
Like, oh my God, it's been, well, I would say since I was 8 or 9 and finished it. I'm in my late 40s. So, you know, finished the first one mid 30s ish.
Yeah.
And I was like, why did this take so long? Because the actual process of writing, it was only about, possibly only about 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, once you put the block, you just sit down and hammer it. I keep talking like I'm like the most prolific writer. So it almost becomes like an infuriating impatience. If you know where it's going, you're like, just get it out. I can't remember who it was. Some author was asking, what would you do? What would you do if you told you were going to die in the next hour? And he replied, type faster.
Once you have the idea, it is in your head and it has to get out, doesn't it? And
I
would find myself walking around with the dogs and I'd have ideas coming in my head and I had to kind of stop and record them because I knew if I left it, it would go and that idea would never be there again. And I'd have whole paragraphs going through my head when I'm nowhere near a computer. And I was just like, it's so frustrating. I just want to get these words down.
I found that really interesting. So you plot, I guess, because...
Loosely.
If I ever read an interview, it's like, oh, don't plot it. Just sit down and just pause out in line. So and so, there's no way that's what happened. But... So do you say you structure the paragraphs? I don't go that far. I tend to look at a chapter and go, this needs to happen at the start. These things occur. And by the end, this is the cliffhanger for this chapter, or this is what's going to make people want to read on next chapter. Real sort of basic structuring. But I don't actually figure out how the paragraphs are going to...
This wasn't structuring them. This was just, I'd be thinking about the story and all of a sudden I'd be writing it in my head.
Oh, wow.
Like it would, and I'd just be thinking, why am I not sitting in front of the computer now? Because I want to be getting this down. You know, this is gold. This is pure gold. All that stuff went because it got lost on the dog walk somewhere. But
use your phone as a dictaphone or anything.
I do sometimes record things. I've got the Otter AI app on it. And I sometimes just speak Otter into AI. That and then it types it up for me. Yeah. So what advice would you have for other people who have maybe always wanted to write a novel?
Get on with it.
Fair enough. Yeah.
No. In all honesty, I got so wrapped up when I wrote the first one. I got so tangled up in, I used to buy like writers' magazines and it's sort of before podcasts, but reading loads of articles. And the problem I find with a lot of articles written by authors is the advice they give you is like the advice people give new parents. It's all based on their own regret. It's not actually terribly, I mean, I've bought your book and I'm looking forward to reading it because I know you know the way you express yourself is very different to a lot of the other things. And I think one of the most helpful things I did was just dump all that.
Right. Yeah.
Get out of being obsessed with the idea of being an author and get on with writing. Mm. Although this book I bought about plotting, about how to plot a romance novel, which, so I think it was Leslie Cookman. That was the real turning point. That was almost the structure that just said, look, you know, you don't have to do it this way, but for a romance novel, the first chapter you introduce these ideas. Mm-hmm. And then once I had that as a very loose structure, I was kind of off and away. But the only other advice I'd give is don't get downhearted. It's just said the amount of times that I've the universe been trying to tell me to stop and I'm refusing. And you can always find a quote about how Carrie was rejected. You know, Carrie by Stephen King was rejected. There's always stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think the state of mind is really important because if you think you're going to fail, you're going to fail.
Mm-hmm,
and then you'll find all the miserable quotes about writing, and that's when it all becomes just a bit of a sad.
Yeah. You want to be writing because you enjoy writing, don't you? Because you enjoy having the ideas and seeing them come to life on the page. And if you get yourself in the wrong head, headspace, then it does become a chore, and you don't want it to be that, do you? You just want it to be something enjoyable. And if anything comes out of it at the end, kind of, that's almost a bonus, isn't it?
That's very much the mindset I'm in. I've got a friend who's another creative, and I told him, we're talking about creativity, because as creative people like to do, it's all kind of, it's how we make us justify our existence to each other sometimes. And we're talking about creativity, and I said, oh, I never create unless I'm in the mood. And yeah. this is a friend who's a musician, and he's a designer who does work for like Google and Samsung and little companies like that. And he just said, that sounds bloody lazy to me. And I was like, what do you mean? Because I've been towing this line of, oh, if I'm not feeling it, I won't do it. And he's like, look, mate, I don't have a choice. You know, client asked me for something, I have to do it. He said, what do you do when you've got to write for a client? I said, I sit down and I do it.
Yeah.
So why is it any different for creative work? And I thought, do you know what, he's right. You know, when someone tells you something, it makes you cross, but it makes you cross because they're right.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
That's one of the great things, I think, about doing NaNoWriMo, that it's writing a 50,000 word novel in November. So you've got a limited number of days. You know, you have to write, I think it comes down to 1,667 words every day which is nothing really, which when you think about it, isn't that much really. But it does mean that the days when you wake up and you just think, oh, I'm really not in the mood for it today, you kind of end up having to do it, because if you one, it's nothing. But once you start falling behind, you know, if you end up with, you've missed 5 days and you've got 10,000 words that you need to write, you know, then that's when it becomes a problem. So it's kind of, it really forces you into that, I have to write every day, even if I'm not quite feeling in the mood for it. And of course, once you sit down and you start writing, you normally find that you are in the mood, you know, and it normally does come. Some days it doesn't. Some days you know, it's like pulling teeth. And other days you sit down and you look up and you've been typing for 2 hours and you've got 2,500 words written down. But it's that, just doing it is the secret, isn't it? Just sit down and do it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you can kind of dream about being a writer, read about being a writer, do all that stuff. Until you're actually sitting down creating words, you're not a writer. For me, it's not who's published you, it's not the reviews, it's not which publisher's interested. It's, are you putting something into the world that didn't exist before? We have the ability to create brand new things, absolutely brand new things that have never existed. And I really admire people who are carpenters and do. My wife's a horticulturalist, so she goes out, she creates, and there's a lot of complexity to a lot of, but with writing there are such an incredibly broad number of complexities that even if you write, I used to really like, do you know about Paragraph Planet? There's a website called Paragraph Planet where you submit, I found out about it through Judy Astley, and you submit 70 word novels. Things like that, just sitting down and just doing a 70 word, not, it's not 70,000 words.
No, 70 words.
And
not even a paragraph.
Not really, but you look and you look at the names of the authors who are doing it for a laugh. You know, there's no money there.
Yeah.
And these are professional authors who, you know, I guess the contracts aren't that tight that they're on, but things like that. Even with 70 words, I try and carefully craft tweets and things, because every little thing you do with words, it's like DNA. That's never going to happen again unless someone nicks it, or someone, or the 8-year-old me just starts copying it out verbatim. You know, it's the opportunity just to make something absolutely brand new. No one else can do it. Only you can do it.
No. That is a really lovely thought to end on, that writing is like DNA and only you can do it. It's unique to you. That's lovely. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I'm looking forward to seeing your new novel when it comes out. Does it have a name yet?
Love and Haste.
Haste. Okay.
Yeah.
I shall be looking out for that sometime this year. I reckon it has to come out, doesn't it? It has to be.
If you want to listen to it. The podcast links are at andrewculture.com, and you can find the podcast links and all kinds of other junk I waste my time doing.
That's fantastic. That sounds like a fantastic place to go, andrewculture.com. I will check that out later on. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. It's been really lovely talking to you.
Thank you, Alison. I've absolutely enjoyed it. Thank you.
Andrew Culture for being my guest on the show today. You can find out more about him and sign up for his podcast at his website andrewculture.com, and his books are also available on Amazon. As usual, the links are in the show notes. If you're now feeling inspired to write a book, then I would love to help you. My website is theproofferry.com, and you'll find lots of information there about how I work with authors, as well as the opportunity to download a free workbook and arrange a free exploratory mentoring call with me. You'll also find all the episodes of this podcast there, along with details on how you can apply to be a guest on the show. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then please subscribe, share it, rate it, and tell your friends about it. This has been a Proof Fairy production, and I'll be back next week with another inspiring interview with another amazing author. Bye for now.